The opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Today, part two of our conversation concerning troubled teens continues. Last week, we identified a number of issues at the very heart of teen misbehavior and discovered that in some instances, parents and guardians of these teens were to blame, while in other instances, we learned that teens are falling prey to the negative pressures of their peers. But, as I said last time and say again today, my returning guest emphasizes that early intervention in the matter is the key to resolving the difficult, frustrating, and sometimes incredibly ugly situations that families find themselves in. But I say, families must first be willing to submit fully to the process. So, if your family is one that is in trouble today, take the first step today. That is by simply listening to what my guest has to say on this show. Then the second step, that is traveling to the Department of Rehabilitative and Welfare Services on JFK and simply telling them that you need their help. And finally, step three, fully embracing the help being given there, even if sometimes it rubs you the wrong way. For like they say, no pain, no gain. But I believe your children are worth it, don't you? I am attorney Indiana Fitzgerald, your guest host for this morning, and you are listening to Guardian Radio AM Live on 96.9 FM. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be in your company this morning. This is attorney Indiana Fitzgerald, and I'm here this morning with my special guest and returning guest, probation officer Mr. Angelo King, and he is with the Department of Rehabilitative and Welfare Services, which has a probation unit within. So, Mr. King, welcome once again to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing, Indy?
I'm great, thanks. You know, last week, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. King did an awesome job in terms of letting us know what issues affect children in these homes, teens in these homes, and cause them to act out, to misbehave in ways that frustrate their parents and take them to their wit's end. And this week he's here, as I said in my monologue, to help parents and to help children get the kind of assistance they need to bring their families together so that families end up on a better footing, on a happier note, where they can stand in the kitchen and they can laugh and talk with each other and talk about the future for each of them and watch each other grow as parent and child and watch the relationship of parent and child grow into something awesome. So by the time these children go out the door and they have their families of their own, the parent can say to those grandchildren, look, you know, your mommy, your daddy came a long way. They put me through something. But they came a long way.
That's true.
Yeah. Before we begin, though, I just wanted to say it disturbed me that last week after Mr. King and I did our Monday show, I would turn on the television and see that there was yet another missing teen girl there. And in addition to that, I had raised with Mr. King, but we didn't have time in the last show nor this one to discuss the issue. The fact that we have so many little children just wandering away from home. And at the end of the day, they end up down at some police station. And you say, well, who was in charge of these children? And not making sure that they were in a safer environment. Mr. King actually sent me a photo of one of the little children in the station. Then I saw it on Facebook. And it's very disturbing. Parents, this is why we're trying to help today.
Definitely.
You got to be better parents, eh, Mr. King?
That's definitely.
You got to be more responsible guardians, eh, Mr. King?
Yes, we have to try to do a real, we have to do a better job when it comes to our children. And, you know, it has to be a full effort from everybody, from the police force, judicial system, the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to do something because at this rate, it's going to continue to happen until mm-hmm. either police start charging mm-hmm. the parents, mm-hmm. and then every circumstance is different.
Yeah.
And when we get to the judicial part of it, mm-hmm. we actually have to start punishing parents mm-hmm. for getting inside these circumstances. Because some of the stories, we don't know if all the stories are true, mm-hmm. but there are some stories that comes out and basically let us know how these children get wandering the streets, mm-hmm. and it's not acceptable.
Right.
It's not, if it is, like I said, if the stories are true, because, you always hear a box story.
Right.
And, you don't hear no one's being charged. I'm not sure who's even picking up the children from the police station,
exactly.
if there's any type of questioning.
Right.
What is going on? So if we just have a society where our children can just do what they want, mm-hmm. parents aren't supervising mm-hmm. their children properly,
mm-hmm.
and they can just go to the police station, pick up their children and go amongst them.
Like it's business as usual.
It's not going to stop.
And what concerns me, Mr. King, is the fact that we're just lucky molesters weren't around to pick up these children rather than some stranger who may be concerned about the child and take them to the station. We're just lucky. We don't see deceased children after they end up wandering like that. We're just lucky. And I wanted to say this particularly when we discussed last week, teenagers going and the fact that they go and they hang with boyfriends and stuff like that. This can get them killed. If I remember
Definitely.
Correctly, the Max Otito case that we all talk about with the worst of the worst and hanging and all of that, I can't remember how old that young lady was, but remember the claim was that she'd gone out to secretly meet with a boyfriend and ended up dead, if I remember the facts correctly. And so I want people to take it seriously, even when you see on the television that a teen is missing, that not just assume they are with a boyfriend.
Because
that they're alive and well, because they may have gone to be with a boyfriend, but things may have turned deadly at that spot even.
Because, like I said, sometimes you have teenagers, they go and visit a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
They have their intimate time.
Yeah.
And depending on the situation, sometimes the young man cannot keep her
mm-hmm.
where he is. We've had situations where we've had young girls staying in abandoned houses after they've been to a boyfriend, especially when the missing report comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And once the missing report comes out, and see, that's why I always said it's very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the life of me, I can't understand how a young girl could go missing. She can go by her boyfriend's house.
Mm-hmm.
The boyfriend doesn't live by himself. He isn't paying no mortgage or no rent. He mm-hmm. lives with his mother, his sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They see this young lady comes inside the house. She stays there for maybe the entire day, mm-hmm. like I said, days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The mother knows, we can assume. Mm-hmm. We can assume the mother knows exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the missing report comes out, mm-hmm. you probably have a conversation like, hey, get this girl out of this house. You
uh-huh.
see this missing, why you have this girl here? Let her go back to her people. And it's get to a point to say, what type of households in 2020 are we running?
So when they go to these abandoned homes, they go because the boyfriend is finished with them and he put them out, or this is just somewhere he has a stay in because she doesn't want to go back home, or she feels like she can't go back home now because her parents have gone to the police and said she's missing. Or what is it?
Well, I'll say it's a case-by-case basis, that being that sometimes their young man says, hey, you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's certain times that you actually do believe some of these boys actually care for these young ladies.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they can't keep them in their mother's house.
Yeah.
And the young lady tries have to find somewhere where she can go, where she doesn't want to go. She then left. She knows if she goes home, she's in trouble. Mm-hmm. Some knows they're going to go to the William A. Pratt Center for Girls. In some cases, they don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll put themselves in these type of dire circumstances to basically where they can actually be harmed. Because let's say a homeless guy comes inside one of these abandoned buildings and sees her there. And does something to her.
Or just a child predator on the whole.
That's correct.
Because all they need is an opportunity. And they're always looking for one.
For opportunity. And then sometimes, when is the child even reported missing?
Yeah.
Because I know I had a... I mean, I won't get too much into because of the time, but we've had a call... I had one of my colleagues. There were some allegations, and the mother lied. The mother said she reported the situation. Mm-hmm. And he called the police station. He did all his batch on his hard work, and he actually found out that the mother did not
report
the incident.
Mm-hmm. Because that's why you've told me before when we privately interviewed for the show that you only know that something is up. For example, if the child was a client of yours, the parent may call and say they're missing, and you will say, did you tell the police?
Yes, I'll say, did you report this?
Yeah.
Did you report it? Or sometimes you see it on social media. Sometimes you see it on social media, you make a call to the parent, because sometimes people will circulate something, an old missing from, because the child might have been missing a year ago, probably 2 years ago, and then, and we don't update photos.
Right.
So it ain't to say, okay, well, there's a new photo.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to call the parent and say, hey, you know what, I see a missing report for whoever. And you try to get some clarity on what's going on. Sometimes you find out that, no, everything is okay. Sometimes they tell you everything is okay, and you find out that they lied. The child actually was missing.
Right.
Came back home, they gave the child an extra. So it's up to you as an officer to do your due diligence.
And even if you don't see anything online, you say that the police don't tell you a child is missing, so you know to be concerned about that family, that there's no requirement for them to tell you.
No, the police don't have to basically contact the department.
Right, now, which I think they should, because once they find the child, I believe that needs to be a family that needs to come see you. I think we need to look at that area of the law.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do their best to try to see how we can navigate that. But at this particular point, you know, the police, they put up the missing report, and they make their rounds. I'm not sure what exactly their procedure, how many times they're supposed to circle a particular area where the child is. But in most cases, if you do investigation, you can find out where a lot of these young girls are.
It's only 21 by 7.
Yes,
and their friends know.
Their friends know.
Their friends may not tell you up front, but they do know.
After a while.
And after a while, they confess.
Yes.
You know, but I really want parents this morning to, you know, get the help from your department that they need. I want them to get it. I want them to get it because there's no need to continue every day in this horrible family situation, knowing that there's help out there.
Yes, sir.
You know, I don't want parents to be like that. There was a mother who had several children. I think she had 7 or 8, and she had one young boy under the age of, I think, about 16, and he died in police custody, and nobody knows why he died, right? I think he was found hanging in a cell or something like that. And the news interviewed her. This was several years ago. And she said, you know, everybody thought she'd be so sad and I want the police to be investigated and all of that. And she was like, well, you know, I got about 6 or 7 of these home now, other little ones younger than him. And he was just so bad. So I get for her, basically, she was saying it was a relief. He was out of the way. At least she could concentrate on the rest. I don't want parents to get to that point. I don't want parents to get to the point where I heard a mother say one day, child, my boy's so bad, all I do is put him in a good insurance. At least I'll make some money out of him when he dies.
Yes.
I don't want to see that.
Yes, we have to do a better job with raising our children. And like I said in the last show, you can tell a lot of parents have given up on their children.
Yeah.
They don't buy school books. They don't buy uniforms. You don't even pick up report card. I don't know how else you can say.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't picked up your child's report card in 2 years, 3 years, there's only two conclusions you can come to. Mm-hmm. Either you know what you're coming there isn't going to be good, or you've just given up on the child. And in that case, which you're giving lunch money and lunch, and I've had clients, and I'm being completely honest, they get like $15 or $20 a day.
Mm-hmm.
$15 or $20 a day for a 0.4, and let's be clear. I don't know if I said this on the last show. If your child is making a 0.2 or a 0.3, somewhere right around that, area.
Yeah.
They're not trying. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have to try to get a 0.2. There's no way. Unless you're mentally challenged, mm-hmm. there's no way a child can get a 0.2, 0.3. That honestly means the child is not trying, and there's no reinforcements from home, from the parents
or
the parents.
To school.
Like I said, there's no reinforcements from home to mm-hmm. make sure the child is actually learn. I'm not even sure what the criteria. You get grades just for changing for PE. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Come into class. You can cheat and find a way to get a 1 point. Literally, you can cheat.
And you ain't even doing that.
That means you ain't even trying to get no good grades.
So let's talk about, first of all, tell everybody where you're located. I said it's JFK, but more specifically, where is this office?
It's JFK by the ministry. It's actually...
The Ministry of Social Services.
Mm-hmm. It's actually right before you reach RBC and Royal Star Insurance. Mm-hmm. It's right before you reach RBC and Royal Star Insurance. It's the yellow.
The BTC building is anywhere near there? The old BTC?
The BTC is across the highway.
Okay, that.
Yeah, BTC would be on the other side of the highway.
Right.
Yeah, so...
And you don't need an appointment to come see you?
No, you don't need an appointment, but there is a time limit that we cut off for intake.
Right.
We would advise all parents, if they're coming for intake, to uh-huh. come before 4 o'clock.
In other words, if they want to be... To receive service
to
read
something, yes. Uh-huh.
And let me ask you this: what age group are you working with?
We will take you starting from the age of 10, mm-hmm. and you know that's where you are liable or responsible for criminal acts.
Mentally, in your head,
mentally,
you could be guilty of a crime.
Right, but yes,
because you understand that what you've done.
There's
is
some
wrong.
Reasoning of right and wrong.
Uh huh.
And like I said, at the age of 10, anything under the age of 10, mm-hmm. we will report. We usually would try to refer to the crisis center, mm-hmm. but we also try to start at 10.
Right, age 10.
Age 10.
Mm-hmm. When you see the people that come to you, is it mostly inner city parents that are coming to you? Like, do you ever have middle class or upper class or the rich come to your department for help with their children?
I wouldn't say the rich.
Uh-huh. Middle class, maybe?
You may see some of the middle class. Everybody gets in trouble. Mm-hmm. It all depends up to the parent on what type of service or help they want. Because mm-hmm. depends on your stature in society. You have parents who would not want to be in a public setting or, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, because it is confidential. The conversations, the interviews, and the rehabilitation process is confidential. But at the same time, you know, the country is small. Mm-hmm. Somebody might see you. Mm-hmm. They know what the department does. There's shame involved.
They're more shamed than willing to get the help sometimes.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
But that's like private school. You know, people always ask me the comparison. Oh, mm-hmm. look at my children come to your department from private, from government school compared to private school. You hardly ever see private school mm-hmm. children or the major private schools, I should say. Mm-hmm. And it's fair to say that. We had some children that come from private schools, and of course we get more government school, but I don't think that's because private school children are better than government mm-hmm. school children or they behave better. Mm-hmm. You know, that is a stigma that is OJ, I send my child to private school. They get in trouble just like government school children.
I know.
The problem is the government school system, and this is not to knock private schools, but they will refer you for government schools. Mm-hmm. Private schools tend to be more of your child isn't behaving, he's kicked out.
They kick you out.
Yeah. So I'm not to say I don't think they care to actually help the children.
Right.
But it's more of you're not behaving.
Right.
You're not doing what you're supposed to do. Sir, ma'am, come for your child. Uh-huh. They're no longer here. And
bye-bye.
You figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about you used to language intake, and we had briefly touched it last time.
Yes.
And so let's talk about let's give it a scenario. So let's say Susie has a son,
okay.
or a daughter, and there's a problem there. And the child is what you would say is uncontrollable.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? And by that, the law actually addresses what uncontrollable is, right? I see here when you deal with the Child Protection Act, they talk about the child being skipping the school and back talking to parents and back talking teachers and staying out away from the home more time than is reasonable. So 3 o'clock in the morning, they out.
Yes.
When they should be home, right? So, and I encourage everybody to go to Bahamas Laws Online, read the Child Protection Act for yourself.
Yes, they definitely do.
And you could understand why, what role Mr. King and his grouping, the law that they have to follow in these scenarios, and just understand all of the aspects of the law's concern for children that's written there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's say Susie and has this child that's not skipping school and doing all kinds of other things, or running away to boyfriend house and all of that. And now she said, I'm at my wit's end. I can't take it anymore. How do they go about once they walk to your office and they come and say, I need your help? What happens from beginning to end?
Okay. What usually happens is the parent comes in with Susie.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we understand that the parent is frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
We do what is called an intake.
Mm-hmm.
An intake is a brief summary on information on the child, the mother, the father, or the guardians,
mm-hmm.
and what seems to be the issue.
Right.
At that time, the intake is taken into, if we may do a small counseling session right then and there to see if we can just, you know, get control of the situation mm-hmm. at that particular time. So, mm-hmm. Before he or she gets an officer, mm-hmm. that there's some type of control in an environment when it goes back home. We don't want it to escalate. At that time, it goes to my supervisor,
mm-hmm.
the intake. My supervisor assigns it to an officer.
Mm-hmm.
That officer gets the file.
Mm-hmm.
They read over the file. They call the parent
mm-hmm.
to set up an interview.
Mm-hmm. A more formal
interview.
Mm-hmm.
At the time they do the interview, there's something that's called a social history report.
Mm-hmm.
We do the social history report. And depending on the situation, which most of the time it goes well, there's very few times we look at a scenario and we say, hold on, this child doesn't need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But in most cases, after we do the social history report, there's something that's called a supervision order.
Mm-hmm.
A supervision order is done that is sent to the magistrate, usually the one for juvenile court number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Magistrate character requests the vote. That is usually signed and stamped and sealed, giving us the authority to supervise the child
mm-hmm.
legally.
So the social history report has what details in it?
Social history report is a more detailed background
mm-hmm.
Form which we fill out on the child. So like I said, on the intake, you might just have mother's name,
mm-hmm.
where she works, mm-hmm. phone number. Mm-hmm. Social history report has just about everything.
Mothers, if they're on drugs, if the kid's on drugs,
mother's name, grandmother's name,
mm-hmm.
where the mother's work, where the father works,
mm-hmm. Situation in the home.
Situation in the home, what mm-hmm. type of rooms,
mm-hmm.
if the house has water,
mm-hmm.
indoor plumbing, if it has electricity,
mm-hmm.
Situation with food,
mm-hmm.
all detailed issues on what's going on
mm-hmm.
with the child. So it's really a detailed background report. Just in case something ever happens to the officer, someone else can just pick up the file
and go run on it,
and they can just pick up.
Mm-hmm.
Where that officer left.
Mm-hmm. And then you said supervision order is then sought from the court for you to take control of the situation.
Yes.
So you sort of become a parent in the situation as
yes.
well. You have a say.
Yes, we do have a say. And that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is, and this has been happening since I've been with the department,
mm-hmm.
you do have parents. There's two issues we have. I can honestly say this.
Mm-hmm.
You have parents that come into the office
mm-hmm.
that use it for a scaring tactic.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't want the help
because right.
they want to maintain control,
right.
but they want to scare their child.
Right.
And, you know, I understand a parent, you know, coming to that conclusion somewhat, but I will say this, you know, you are using government time and resources.
What others could benefit from.
Yes, where other parents, parents who actually
needs
the help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to waste the officer's time and the waste of time
mm-hmm.
on trying to use it as a scaring tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we also have to do report writing. We have to write for the court. We have to do probation reports,
mm-hmm.
detailed reports.
Where there are criminal matters involved.
And
juveniles or adults.
Yes. So for us to take our time to stop doing the reports
mm-hmm.
to deal with your child
mm-hmm.
and you don't really want help, you just want us to scare the child,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't have the manpower for that, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We're overworked now, but we're trying our best. So I tell everybody to be more considerate. And the next thing I would say is what we have with parents, and I believe I said this on the last time I was on the show,
right.
that we have to be parents. Parents usually come to us when they're at their wit's end.
Right.
And usually I want him to go to boys. I want him to go to girls. So it's like one extreme to the next. And you can't expect you put up with your child's behavior for 3-4 years. Of course, you're at your end point. But I am just seeing the child. Or the officers at the department are just dealing with your child. So at that particular point, we have to work with the child. We're not in the business of locking up, mm-hmm. you know, the country's darlings, or we're mm-hmm. not trying to detain nobody's child unless we have to. Mm-hmm. We're actually, it is rehabilitative. And mm-hmm. wherever I say, our job is to rehabilitate. And mm-hmm. you have to give us the opportunity to try and help your child to rehabilitate. Just because you've been dealing with it for 3-4 years and I've been failing at it, mm-hmm. doesn't mean the first time the child makes a mistake while he is in my supervision means right. I'm supposed to take he or she and put them
Tournament
away.
Tournament Willamette Pratt.
Yes.
Or Simpson. Because yes. you have that authority to seek from the court the permission to do that if things don't work out.
Definitely.
With the other methods that you try.
Definitely.
But for in the first instance, when you're just dealing with the situation at hand for the going off period, you're not going to that extreme yet.
No, definitely mm-hmm. not. Like I said, we're not, the department is not in the business of just mm-hmm. throwing kids away or giving up on kids. We mm-hmm. really try our best. I'll be honest with you. There's probably even a notion some of the parents said, we side with the children mm-hmm. or we're too lenient on the children. I don't think we side with the children. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, there's a lot, and I'll say verbatim again, there's a lot of bad parenting going on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad parenting going on.
So when you have the supervision order in play, before that actually it becomes official, with you having gone down to court to get the court to sign off on it and seal it, up to that point, before that is actually issued, the parent can decide, I want to walk away. I don't, because I realize you're going to have certain control over my kids, and I don't want that.
Yes, they can. They can refuse service, or right. sometimes what you find with a lot of parents think about. They come in, they get the help, mm-hmm. they think about it, they probably change their mind, mm-hmm. and when the file is assigned to an officer mm-hmm. and they call, mm-hmm. they don't answer, right. or when they answer, they said, I don't need the help
anymore.
Because mm-hmm. sometimes I think they dwell on it. Mm-hmm. You know, probably talking to a grandparents, because you know the grandparents, they love their grandchildren.
Right.
You ain't need to go there, the boy don't.
You ain't got
to
put Junior up there.
And I've been saying this from my research department. For some odd reason, grandparents yeah. never parent their grandchildren
yeah.
the way they parent it. They don't want children.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if because they get tired, but it's something with grandparents when they reach a certain age
right.
and they get them grandchildren.
Right.
What grandchildren are allowed to get away with,
right.
their own children right. was not allowed to get away with.
But I would discourage parents who come to you and know their situation is bad and then take the decision that they're not going to stay around to get the help because they don't like the terms of the help. I'm going to encourage them to stay in there. And, you know, they have to realize with these supervision orders, you don't take custody. You don't always take that child out of the house and put it somewhere else. The parents have custody, control of the physical being of the child. It's just that you would put some things in place.
Some guidance. You say some guidance.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about some of the forms of guidance you could put in place. You have, for example, you can do counseling.
We can do counseling. Mm-hmm. Counseling is one form of guidance. You know, we have a substance abuse issue inside this country. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into specifics on
right.
what anybody belief system is, because there clearly is a wide range mm-hmm. on what we should and should not do when it comes to drugs, especially when it comes to marijuana. But right. I think we all could come to the conclusion. I think most reasonable people can come to the conclusion and say that even if you believe so, there should be an age limit. Kids should not be smoking.
Right.
You know, like I tell people before, you know, the brain isn't developed yet. And, you know, you have kids them that are, their brain is what we like to call fried.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of issues, and then you got to find out why they're smoking, what issue they're trying to escape.
Some say stress.
Some say stress, and yeah. some, I don't know how much stress. I mean, there yeah. are kids that have some stressful situations.
Absolutely.
But you know, we have to figure that out, and sometimes it's a fad. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you see their friend is smoking, everybody is smoking, so mm-hmm. they're like, hey, let me smoke. It's the cool thing to do. And then there's been an uptake you see in our young ladies that are yeah. actually smoking marijuana, you know.
Wow.
You know, I had clients before, they'll tell you, you know, and this is just tell you how, this is why I always said we need to really watch and control the way we're raising our kids. I had a young man before when we had the boys group, and he said, she could roll my joint better than me. And he was in grade 11. She was, and his girlfriend was in grade 11.
Wow.
And she could have, he basically said she could have rolled his joint better than he could.
Wow.
And you can, when he told me the story, you can see how elated or proud he was. And that, I found that so
sad. I have a problem with that whole marijuana issue. So when they come to talk about whether or not they need to legalize that or allow casual use of that, that's a big fat N plus O from me for many reasons. But let's talk about other. So with the counseling, you can do counseling at your department.
Yes.
And that's free?
That's free.
Or you can outsource it to other places.
Yes, definitely.
And some aspects of that may be free, but they may have to pay for things. Like if there's a suspicion that there's drug use, like they may have to pay for drug testing.
Yes.
So tell people of the two places that you sometimes outsource to.
Oh, one of the two places is to Dr. David Allen, the People Helping People.
Right, David Allen.
And then there is Solutions Counseling Service Networks. Mm-hmm. That is run by Mrs. Emma Bassett.
And that's in Farrington Road,
That's on Farrington Road, yes.
And where's the Dr. David Allen's?
Dr. David Allen's located.
Is it East Street or no?
No, it's close to the. Yeah, that's on East Street coming down.
Right.
That's by close to where the hospital is.
Right.
On the main, right on the curve heading into the hospital. You have to make that right.
So you, if you think you need that, you can't just. If you go there on your own, you're going there and you're going to pay some private fees.
I would assume, yes.
But if you come through you, at the department, there may be no cost involved in some situations.
Yes, there may be no cost involved.
Mm-hmm. And let's just say about the supervision orders, right, that you pursue in some, once people say, I need this help with the child. Once you're locked into that order, though, the parent can't just jump up and say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want my child to be subjected to these rules anymore. Or the child can't say, well, I'm for this no more, right?
Not necessarily.
Right. But I mean, without good reason.
Without good reason, yes. Mm-hmm. The officer isn't, like I said, if we see, if there is, example, it's very touchy, but mm-hmm. let's just say there's a suspicion of something, the child is going to be in danger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's our due diligence as officers not to just, hey, she says she doesn't want to service anymore, let me leave the child alone.
Mm-hmm.
I may have to, in some cases, enforce some type of action to be done because I still have to look at the welfare of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, what we do is it's written in the name, Department of Rehabilitative and Welfare Services. We have to make sure the welfare of the child is in good order.
And when you have a situation where, for example, there are other things that you can set up as a guideline for the children to do under the supervision order, like you say, do drug testing. So
curfew.
You can make sure. Curfew.
Curfews. That's just very. You have to do a better job at curfews.
Children making sure they're attending school.
Making sure they're attending school, mm-hmm. making sure they're actually in classes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you follow up on all these obligations?
Sometimes we call the school, we ask mm-hmm. how the child is doing. We have a relationship with most of the guidance counselors mm-hmm. in each school, the public mm-hmm. school system, some private school. We try our best to liaison with them and see if there's any issues. You know, I had a client, I got a call from a guidance counselor
mm-hmm.
last week, and they was let me know that there were two incidents with one of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to call that client in last week, talk to them with the parents, and basically let them know what's going on. And what is always funny, the parent didn't know.
Mm.
And, you know, but like I said, we need to have more. The school and parent relationship needs to improve mm-hmm. also. Parents should be constantly checking on their kids. Even I'm not saying they have to be every week, but at least once a month, you should be, hey.
Going to PTA.
Hey, go to PTA. How's John doing in school? Mm-hmm. How's his grades?
Especially if they were doing badly before.
Yeah, if they were doing badly before. And that way, and if the kids see that,
mm-hmm.
I think they're more inclined to behave because they'll be, okay, I know this month, mommy, you have to go check Mr. Vo, and Mr. Vo have to basically let her know if I'm in class, or let me try to behave, let me try to do my schoolwork, you know.
And there's so much truancy, children just out all about. Even in COVID, there were children on the beach when you were supposed to be home on the computer doing your studies.
You can.
You know, and I think the school needs to step up on the fact that these kids are missing and need to tell the parents and do other things to make whoever's in authority know, or even contact you and say, this is what we're experiencing, so that it doesn't get worse. Because this is when you can't find them in the school, this is when they're out committing crimes. This is when they open themselves up to being killed or taking opportunities to go kill people because they're in these gang situations. And it just needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed now.
Yes, it definitely needs to happen. I mean, I'm pretty sure we still have truancy officers. I don't know.
I heard about 5 a couple years
ago. Okay, yeah.
I'm not for this whole place. Yes,
yeah, I'm not sure how many officers they do have.
Yeah.
So, and then we have to look at the circumstances also, because in this day and age, you can get yourself in a serious physical altercation walking up to a child, asking a child while you're not in school.
I ask, but they tell you all kinds of stories. Well, it's the teacher's day off or their meeting or whatever. So how do you verify that?
I know the police, the Roy Bombers police force is stressed right now, and mm-hmm. they're fighting crime, and they are understaffed also, from what I've heard. I always say they need more officers.
Yes.
So I understand that the manpower is not there, but we actually really do need to start something where you just, because you couldn't do it. I can know one thing, mm-hmm. I'm not that old, you couldn't walk mm-mm. during school hours. You literally, but yeah, they'll ask you why you're at school. You go inside a police car, go to the station, mm-hmm. and someone had to come to verify basically why you're not in school and why you're not. We definitely not. I can go outside now, drive for 1 mile, and I guarantee you, I'm going to see at least 30 to 40 young kids mm-hmm. just out there roaming, walking. Nobody cares.
I know. I went to private school. I thank God for putting parents in my life who were able to afford me that opportunity. But I still care about those who aren't afforded that opportunity. Yes. And so I'd like to see them do what they used to do with us in private school. Every single class you went to, a register was taken. From you get to school in the morning, they take a register to the point when you leave.
I think they do that sometimes.
And if you're not on that register, they call in your house right away or call in your parents' workplace right away. They don't just make a note that you're not here.
Yeah, it's
like follow up.
Yeah, I think some of them try now to call in the parents' part. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, mm-hmm. and a lot of that may be due to the. I think we have way more kids than when I was in school mm-hmm. and when you were in school. So, if you're looking at a student body of almost 800 kids, mm-hmm. To call, you may have a situation one day where you have 100 kids.
Yeah, but you got to call.
Yeah, you got to.
Because when you look, you find out one of them is dead. You know, one year when I was in private school, these two fellas decided they go into the beach over PI.
Okay.
And that's the fastest I ever saw the actual location of any child being determined, because they started an investigation in school. Well, who know where these two could probably possibly be? Because we got to tell their parents something, and answers came. That's how you got to be. But let me ask you this. So when you have a situation where you have the supervision order in play and the parent or the child doesn't obey the order, there's a breach.
Yes,
they're breaking curfew, or the parents aren't checking to make sure the child adheres to the curfew. What can be done to the parent and the child in that situation? How do you address that?
Well, like you said, there is a breach that is done, mm-hmm. that is sent to the court, mm-hmm. juvenile court specifically. Mm-hmm.
Complaining of either the parent or the child being in breach.
Parent or the child, or mm-hmm. both. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, a determination will be made on what is the right course of action to go from there on out.
Mm-hmm. When you have to make a decision when you say that decision will be made as to what to do from that point on, who makes that decision? The court upon your advice, or the court alone, or who?
The officers and the court work together.
Okay.
To get an answer. So there can be a recommendation mm-hmm. on what to do with the child, mm-hmm. or what is the right course of action with the parent or the child. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, the court, the magistrate at the time, he or she reviews the file. Mm-hmm. I reviews the order, my part. Reviews the breach, reviews the order. Mm-hmm. And they make a determination if they should agree with the officers or if they believe that maybe there's another or a better course of action to take.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the situation where you as the probation officer responsible for a case, you've done everything you could to get this child going in a better direction, but it's just not working. Even if the parent is helping, the child isn't cooperating, whatever it is. And so you then have the right to put that child in another place, in either Willamette Pratt or
Simpson-Penn Center for Boys.
Right. So, first of all, what goes into that decision-making process in your head when you're in the office looking at all of the scenarios of the child?
Okay. Like anything, every officer is different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we kind of have like a guideline where most of us, we agree on. Mm-hmm. With me, specifically, mm-hmm. I'll say this. If a child is not improving, mm-hmm. if we're giving the child the right resources, if we're giving the child the right help, mm-hmm. and he or she is not improving, mm-hmm. that has to come across, you know, that has to be taken under consideration mm-hmm. if the child should be placed inside the Willamette Pratt Center for Girls mm-hmm. or the Simpson Penn Center for Boys. Mm-hmm. Another issue is, you know, and this is where we always have a lot of problems with the parents also. Mm-hmm. Our job is to rehabilitate. Mm-hmm. But there is an obligation with the officers, each officer, to mm-hmm. protect society from your child mm-hmm. if we see the child going astray. So mm-hmm. there may be a situation where a young man comes in, gets caught with a knife, mm-hmm. got unlawfully carrying arms. Mm-hmm. That's what he's charged with. We give him a chance. Mm-hmm. We try to rehabilitate. We hear that he was in a fight in school. Mm-hmm. We come back. We bring back the child, trying to figure out what's going on. We find out there's some gang involvement. Mm-hmm. Try to figure out how we can get him out of the gang, why he went in the gang mm-hmm. to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, usually there's some anger issues. We find out what's the triggering factors when it comes to the anger and how we're going to deal with them triggering factors to basically calm you down and reframe from getting in more problems. Mm-hmm. Then you may get a last call. He stabbed somebody. Mm-hmm. Now you have a parent that comes in and, oh, this boy always fooling with my child. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ain't saying my child is no saint, but what about these boys?
Messing with my child.
And this mm-hmm. and that. And then, but I have to take under consideration, well, mm-hmm. I can't. There's another lady out there who's raising, he or she is raising their children. And not to say that they might be a better parent than right. you, but they're clearly doing a better job or in a better situation than you are at this particular point. Mm-hmm. To give your child 2 and 3 chances, I right. must subject the rest of the country to him stabbing.
Because he then took up
he then
the
stabbed
person's job.
So mm-hmm. You have to put a situation where I have to detain you. Mm-hmm. Or I have to put you in some institution where you're going to be detained. And right. so we can rehabilitate you in a confined environment.
And when you look at the environment that the child is in, you could see this environment isn't going to get this child any better.
No.
Because drugs selling here, yeah. prostitution in the house.
The brother inside a gang.
Yeah.
Your home. You know, sometimes, and I'm sympathetic with some of the kids because you have some of the kids there that basically they say they're never home, they're never home. Then you go mm-hmm. to the house, and I'm not throwing rocks or throwing stones at anybody,
right.
but the house doesn't have no indoor plumbing. Mm-hmm. The house doesn't have no electricity.
Mm-hmm. No food.
No food.
Hardly.
Hardly any food. If they food, well, most people are cooking fast food anyway, mm-hmm. but that's a different topic. But they're inside home. If I was a child, I wouldn't want to be home either.
Yeah.
So when they ask you, Mr. King, I say, school knock off 3. Why you go till 8, right, 9 o'clock? And then you look at the living circumstances.
Right.
And I have to be honest. If I was in a house with no running water, no electricity,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to be home.
You'd be skipping out of there.
Yeah,
too.
I'd be trying to go
hang talk, up by somebody else's house.
Go with some friends.
Who's a little better.
Yeah, in a better situation. Mm-hmm. I really wouldn't want to come there to sleep.
Mm-hmm. What is the process then once you determine that you need to put somebody in Simpson Penn, or could it even be Sandilands that they need to go because mentally there's some issues there? Can you go to the court about that?
Yeah, we can go to the court about mm-hmm. Sandilands. Mm-hmm. Usually Sandilands is for the substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
There are some situations where an officer may look at a child and something may be off.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're not mm-hmm. Certified to make that determination
right.
legally. So what we'll do is we refer them to Sandilands and they can actually do their own assessment
mm-hmm.
there. And the doctors will basically let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. Let us know if there is any issue, what's
mm-hmm.
going on with the child. You know, there's a belief system that, oh, they're going to put my child on medication.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. That
mm-hmm.
isn't true. They might tell you, hey, your child has this issue or we
right.
diagnose it with this. But most of the time when we send children for behavioral issues,
mm-hmm.
no, final day, you have something like just conduct disorder.
Right. You mean after Simpson Pen?
No, so Sandalitz. Oh, okay. They just say conduct disorder. A lot of times the child is just have behavioral issues.
So when you have to go to the court, though, for the Simpson Pen and Willam A. Pratt intake situation, what is the procedure there?
Well, the intake situation is done before, huh?
Yeah, I just mean that whole scenario where you have this child in your...
Usually there's what is called a care order and an affidavit. Mm-hmm. The care and affidavit details basically the history. It's very, very short.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically almost like a bullet point history of the child, what went on, what has happened with each particular child,
mm-hmm.
what was done as far as helping the child,
mm-hmm.
and how he got to the point where he or she needs to be detained,
mm-hmm.
where they need to be detained. So mm-hmm. that is laid out in a care order and affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gives my credentials, history, and it speaks mm-hmm. to the Child Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
And we send that to the magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
The magistrate reviews the care order and the affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, once he or she deems it necessary or sees that everything is in order,
mm-hmm.
he or she makes a determination on to agree
mm-hmm.
with the care order and signed it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like I said, they can actually say, hey, let's try this, or let me bring in the child to the court. Find out what's going on. Let mm-hmm. me have one more talk with the child to basically see if there's any other avenue we can do on helping the child.
Right.
And usually that's how it's done.
And the boys are, we call it, it's old boys and girls, but would they, when you go up there, they can keep that child for a period of 3 years or until they arrive at age 18?
Yes, they can. Mm-hmm. I have to really explain this. Mm-hmm. There is a 3-year consecutive stay.
Mm-hmm.
That's as long as the child can stay on a care order. Usually we don't do 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We do it. Like I said, it has to be in extreme circumstances where
mm-hmm.
the child is in danger to themselves or is in danger, or they can endanger society or other kids.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, like I tell people, when you get to the Boys and Girls School,
mm-hmm.
or Simpson Penn Center for Boys, Willam A. Pratt Center for Girls,
mm-hmm.
there is if you stay there for a year and you're out, mm-hmm. you can stay till the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
But if there isn't a criminal matter,
mm-hmm.
and he or she attains the age of 17,
mm-hmm.
we can't put that child inside mm-hmm. the Simpson Penn Center for Boys or the Willam A. Pratt Center for
mm-hmm.
Girls.
Mm-hmm.
So
the law doesn't permit you to make that application to the court?
No. What happens is, like I said, If you're not behaving and you're 16,
mm-hmm.
even if you're one day before 17,
mm-hmm.
and I get that order signed before mm-hmm. then,
you could do it.
I could do it. Once he or she turns 17,
mm-hmm.
once he or she turns 17,
mm-hmm.
and it isn't a criminal
mm-hmm.
model,
uh-huh.
the boy, he just isn't doing his chores. He said, "Mommy."
Right. Because if he had done a crime, he could go there until he's
18. If he done a crime, it goes through
mm-hmm.
the court.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the court could mm-hmm. sanction you, but let's just say he doesn't want to do his chores. Mother's telling him, hey, you have to clean your room, wash the dishes. And he's like, mm-hmm. oh, I ain't listening to you. I ain't doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. I walking out
mm-hmm.
the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already 17.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can do.
I saw...
At least not as far as detaining them.
Them at that place.
At that place.
I even saw where the legislation seems to say you can't even go for a supervision order at 17.
No, we can't supervise you at 17. Mm-hmm. Everything is voluntary. Mm-hmm. Now we can still offer help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we can offer help. So if you're 17
mm-hmm.
and you say, my son needs some counseling. Could you talk to my son? Could mm-hmm. you help my son? You can come to the department. Of course, we will help you.
Right.
But if he isn't listening or he isn't responding,
you can't make him stay.
Yeah, there's no backbone. We have to actually make him do what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, and I think just to go back to the point where you see the parent is preaching the responsibility to do certain things that you've instructed be done for a child, or the child is preaching it. I don't think we talked about the penalties or what can be done in that instance.
With the parent?
For the breach or the child.
Yes. Well, with
In terms of court?
Well, in court, usually for children, it's just detention.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done when it comes to detention? Of course, you have, like, community service,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, counseling,
mm-hmm.
you know.
For the breach.
For the we can order certain things.
Right. But what about the parent?
With the parent...
Mm-hmm.
There can be fines.
Mm-hmm.
There can be fines.
Can they be jailed?
There could be detention if it's necessary.
So for failing to follow the instructions that you've said, That's what a parent can
pay. I'll say it like this. I would leave that mostly to the magistrate to decide. But there can be a dire situation where, an example, let's just say a young lady came in and she said she was molested.
Mm-hmm.
And we report that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still some behavioral issues. We still have to deal with the behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. There's a deeper context that goes to child protection.
Right, the molestation part.
Yeah, the child protection would do their background check and their investigation to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say we came in and the molestation happened from a mother's boyfriend.
Right.
And the court says, listen, this is an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Your boyfriend isn't allowed to be inside the home for the, for the betterment of the child, or the child has to go somewhere else. And the young lady comes back, Mr. King, she sneaked my boyfriend in the house. Sneak her boyfriend inside the house 12, 1 o'clock. I came out, he was there, he looked at me, he said, I'm pretty sure the magistrate would basically look at that situation. There can possibly be some detention for the parent at that time, because you're endangering the child.
Well-being.
Yes.
And I want people to understand, by law, there is a duty to be in control of your child,
Yes.
That is a legal duty.
Yes, it is.
Read the Child Protection Act. Yes. So mind us telling you that you can come in when you feel you're at the breaking point, because you have a duty in law to get the help you need or to get that situation in control one way or the other.
Yes, and like I said, we have to actually find out if parents actually really want to help their children.
Right.
That's definitely an issue. One, just briefly, I'll say this. There was a situation one time where a young boy was going to the Simpson Penn Center for Boys, and he was sent there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a question to the magistrate at that time. I said, in this situation, does the father still have to pay child support?
Mm-hmm.
She got extremely upset, the mother,
to
the point where she said she doesn't even want him. We didn't even get to the point yet to say that, but she doesn't even want the boy to go there anymore. And then that's probably a deeper question we probably need to acts or the trivial, because when they're in the Simpson Center, the state is basically taking care of the job. Even if you get to the point where we're saying, okay, there are certain things that still needs to be done, maybe it could be put on the side or the court could hold it until the child, to serve better use, because we're feeding the children, we're clothing the children. The taxpayers' money, that's the one that's really
paying that.
So it just shows you that the parent really doesn't really want their help if it comes to messing up with their finance.
Right, because they want the money for themselves.
They want the money for themselves.
Let's just say there's also a national parenting program out there that you can recommend for parents to go to actually get counseling, get guidance, assistance.
Yes.
Yeah. And where is that unit located?
University Drive now, I think it is. Yeah. Thompson Boulevard, University Drive.
Near J.S. Johnson
inside the plaza.
And that's free?
That's free.
But they have to come through you to get to that? Or they can go on their own?
They can go on their own to make an application. Okay. They can go on their own.
Okay, let's just talk about the numbers for you again, because we have probably 1 minute.
Okay.
376-3815, ladies and gentlemen. If you need to call and ask any questions of Mr. King's unit, about the whole process, and you know where he's located. I gave you the number again, 376-3815. There's a hotline for children nationally. If there's an emergency issue involving children, that is 322-2763 or 422-2763. You know, this show is always on the Guardian Radio app, posted the day after the show. Pull the show down and pay attention if you need to what is said here, so you can have the information and go over it again if there's anything you missed here. Mr. King, they need to give you your own independent office, because I think that your enthusiasm and your knowledge of this area makes you capable of holding an office of your own where you can tend to these children's issues. And I pray government will do it, and I pray the minister and state minister will meet with people like yourself who are actually on the ground and get your advice as to what needs to really be done to turn situations around for families, for teens, and to make this country and them better people in this place a better place.
Thank you, India. I appreciate that.
Please, do it, government. Do it. We need it. Thank you, Mr. King, my special guest. Thank you to my producer, Mr. Kermit Ramming. Thank you to you, the audience. Thank you to the sponsors. God, my source, my family who prays for me, the listening audience, and Dwight Strawn, station manager, for giving me this opportunity one more time to be in your presence. God bless you, everybody. Have a fantastic week. Attorney Indiana Fitzgerald, signing out.